Stay tuned for one of the most fascinating programs you'll ever hear as we explore the strange and mysterious world of the paranormal and UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet Continuum, a weekly program dealing with extraordinary claims of the paranormal on Earth and beyond. Whether or not you believe in the paranormal, the controversies are real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, Director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of parapsychology, futuristic science, and the UFO enigma. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss some of the most fascinating and strange subjects around. Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, home of common sense, no-nonsense paranormal talk radio. We have a really interesting topic tonight. It's about a bit of cloth, a mysterious fire, and a deep mystery. In the late evening of April the 11th, a mysterious fire raged through the chapel of the Shroud of Turin in Italy. Now, despite the $40 million damage to the chapel, a fireman saved the shroud from burning for a third time in its long history. The shroud that I speak of is the Shroud of Turin, a mysterious cloth that depicts what Roman Catholics claim is the image of Jesus Christ. The Shroud of Turin is an archaeological textile that's believed to be the burial cloth of Jesus of Nazareth. It measures 4.36 by 1.10 meters. The material is linen with a 3-to-1 herringbone twill weave. It depicts the frontal and dorsal images of a man, and it has multiple water stains and possibly several blood stains. The image has a straw yellow color. Now, although efforts to debunk the authenticity of this piece of cloth have failed, the cause of the image is still a deep mystery, and many are still wondering how this image was made. It is not a photograph, a painting, or something caused by a natural process. My guest tonight was one of the original team of researchers that went to Turin, Italy in 1978 to attempt to explain the image. We're going to explore what makes this piece of cloth so special and why a fire may have started in the chapel that holds it. Now, coincidentally, or possibly not, there was a gala dinner being held in that same complex on the night of the fire. This gala was in honor of Kofi Annan, the United Nations Secretary General, and a host of other top business and political leaders. We're going to find out what they may have to do with it when my guest joins us in just a moment. But first, we have some news. Hale Bopp continues to be in the news, and this article comes from the Washington Post. As Comet Hale Bopp speeds away from the sun, sinking lower in the northwest evening sky, it has grown an intriguing new feature, a kind of tail never before seen in a comet. Observers using the Isaac Newton group of telescopes in the Canary Islands in mid-April found the appendage using special instruments that filtered all light except the yellow emitted by sodium atoms. The European team reports that they were quite surprised to find a whole tail composed of sodium about 373,000 miles wide and 31 million miles long. Now, a week ago, NASA's Polar Satellite reported that it had made an independent observation of the new tail consisting of electrically neutral sodium atoms, which glow with the same yellow tint of the flame seen when salt, which contains sodium, is thrown on a fire. Polar researchers found that when they took their observations 2 weeks earlier than the European team, the comet, including its tail, was 500,000 miles wide and at least 7.5 million miles long. It narrowed and lengthened after it rounded the sun and headed back toward deep space. The findings brought Hale Bopp's total tail tally to 3. Now, like other comets, it has been bright, visible tail of dust streaming off its core and reflecting sunlight, and a fainter bluish ion tail made up of electrically charged atoms stripped off by the solar wind. Interesting article. Okay, something a little more lighthearted. Campers can sleep at sight of Roswell UFO report. This comes from AP, and it's got the dateline of Roswell, New Mexico. The UFO aficionados could have a camping experience that's out of this world this summer when they sleep at the site where some believe an alien spacecraft crashed 50 years ago. The camping will be part of a week-long celebration commemorating the 50th anniversary of the alleged sighting. Previous tours of the property have been limited to 30 minutes during the day. Ever since we first began letting people visit the site, we've been asked if we'd allow them to camp overnight, said Roswell rancher Hub Korn. Tickets for one night during the July 1st through 6th anniversary week cost $90 and are limited to 2,000 people, organizers said in a news release. Organizers also plan to install a memorial stone sculpture garden featuring 20-foot-tall obelisks and a plaque dedicating the sacred site to the beings who met their destinies near Roswell, New Mexico, in July of 1947. A rancher near Roswell found debris on July 8, 1947, and an Air Force officer was reported to have discovered a flying disc fueling UFO buffs' theories. A 1994 Air Force investigation found that the debris probably came from a once-top-secret balloon designed to monitor the atmosphere for evidence of Soviet nuclear tests. It's interesting. Don't believe in UFO aliens? Or visit San Francisco's UFO Museum. From CNN, Eric Beckyard has no use for skeptics. As the owner of San Francisco's UFO Museum, why should he? Faces on Mars, the Loch Ness Monster, or an alien with a name tag of Andy, if it's far-fetched and unproved, Beckyard buys it. And it's all on display at his storefront museum. We had a big party with the belly dancers and a UFO showed up, he says, without a hint of irony. It stayed 3 hours and kept asking to plug into the wall. They were cheap aliens. They didn't want to pay for their own juice. Right. Not everyone who stops into the UFO museum is as believing as Beckyard. But it doesn't bother him that some may remain unconvinced, as one of his exhibits suggests that the face of an alien can be found in the Hale-Bopp comet. Where we heard that before. With the card-carrying skeptics, we will never win, says Beckyard, who claims he saw Bigfoot crossing a city street. Beckyard has little hard evidence to support his sightings, but does claim to have public opinion on his side. There are more people who have seen UFOs than voted for President Clinton, he maintains. Okay, stay tuned. When we come back, we'll introduce my guest. I also have another news story that is going to be pertinent to the topic this evening. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
Many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP, and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth, challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services in MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read.
We can rebuild it. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com.
Paranet Continuum, where we answer questions and question answers. And we want to know what you think. Call us and stay tuned. Now back to your host, the Director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back. And before I introduce my guest, I want to read another news piece that came from the Jerusalem Post Daily Internet Edition from April the 14th. And this is kind of topical to the subject tonight. The title of the article is Local Plant Evidence Supports Authenticity of the Shroud of Turin. It's an article by Judy Siegel, and again, it's from Jerusalem. It says, powerful evidence supporting the view that the Shroud of Turin, the garment in which Jesus is said to have been wrapped after his crucifixion, originated in the land of Israel, has been provided by researchers at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem and Duke University in North Carolina. The scientists have succeeded in identifying 28 species of plants that grow in the land of Israel among the images of flowers that appear on the shroud. All of them grow in the area between Jerusalem and Jericho, and most are spring flowers that apparently were picked during the period of the crucifixion and placed on the 4.1 meter by 1.1 meter piece of linen. On the shroud appears the negative image of a man with long hair and a mustache who had been cruelly whipped, and a number of blood spots were spattered on it. The human image is similar to drawings of Jesus that have been seen since the 4th century. These are also hundreds of images of flowers and other plants and objects on the shroud. Now, Hebrew University professor Avinoam Danin, an expert on the plant life of the land of Israel, was asked in 1995 by Dr. Alan Wanger, a Duke University medical lecturer, and his wife Mary, to study images of flowers on the shroud. They used a special process of photography, along with negatives and ultraviolet light scanning, to increase the contrast and make visible images that are not easily seen by the naked eye. The Wangers, who are believing Christians, found hundreds of images of plants, particularly in the area of the human figure's head. They then matched these images to drawings in the authoritative botanical work Flora Palestina, and in this way identified 28 types of plants. Danin verified their conclusions and was even able to determine that additional images on the shroud could be associated with plants from the land of Israel. I can't say for certain that it was Jesus' shroud, said Danin, who disclosed his findings in a lecture to biology students last week and is still very excited about them. But this evidence backs up the possibility that it is genuine, and there is no doubt that it comes from the land of Israel. Interesting article. My guest tonight is a professional photographer. He is a graduate of the Brooks Institute of Photography and was on the faculty at Brooks Institute for 10 years. He's operated his own commercial studio for over 15 years and currently works in production of video and film. He currently produces home videos for Disney Home Video and scientific and medical production for such institutions as Cedars-Sinai Medical Hospital in Los Angeles. Barry was also the documenting photographer for the Shroud of Turin Research Project, which conducted the first in-depth scientific examination of the Shroud of Turin cloth. From Los Angeles, it's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Barry Schwartz. Good evening, Barry. Hello, Barry. Barry, are you there?
I am. I lost audio there.
Well, thank you for being on the program tonight.
Truly my pleasure. I appreciate you asking.
Okay, before we get started, let's talk a little bit about the fire that occurred over there. What happened over there on April the 12th?
Well, apparently somewhere around 11:45, a fire was discovered. My sources told me that there actually had been an earlier alarm around 11 o'clock, just at the close of the ceremonies for the Secretary General. And they had investigated. They found nothing. And basically 45 minutes later, a fire was discovered, smoke and flames. So it's unclear at the moment what the cause was, although speculation at the time was it might have been some of the materials to keep the food warm, the food warming devices. That basically, according to my sources, has now been excluded. So really an answer to the actual cause of the fire is still open, and they are investigating.
Now, this fire has been labeled as mysterious, and I guess part of the reason why is they have not been able to determine, you know, the origin of it.
Well, that's true, but frankly, just about everything relative to the Shroud of Turin is labeled mysterious. I'm not surprised. My read on it, of course, is to give the investigators the time they need and to see what they can determine.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that ultimately I think some conclusions will be come to. I believe at this point, though, there really hasn't been ample time for a thorough investigation, and they intend to continue until they have an answer. So I'm kind of holding back and listening and waiting for their opinions, although I have heard that just about the time the fire broke out, a passerby was going home. She had a camera with her. She made some photographs of the fire and flames, and at least in her photographs, it appeared that the fire may have started on the outside of the dome. Whether that's true or not, however, is open to speculation at this point because the firemen believe that the fire began within the dome and that the scaffolding may have shielded it from an exterior view until it actually burned through. So I guess at this time it's still open to interpretation, but the investigation continues, and they estimated about 3 months before they would have conclusive final report.
That's interesting. I have a New York Times article that was faxed to me about the fire. I guess some of the leading theories that they have are that the fire was possibly set unintentionally.
Well, I've heard that, and obviously that is a possibility, you know, with the cloth as controversial as this and its significance to so many people on the planet. It is quite possible that some person out there may have felt that it was necessary to try and do something to it. Of course, there is a public display of the cloth, a six-week exhibition scheduled for April, starting in April of 1998, and of course this might have hampered that, although the Archbishop of Turin assures the public that the exhibition will go on as planned.
Okay. That's pretty interesting. Do you have any theories or, in your opinion, who might want to destroy that shroud?
Well, you know, I really don't have a theory on that. I would guess that, you know, just about any kind of kook out there who might have something against either the Catholic Church or possibly, you know, even the science of the shroud. It's very hard to speculate on that. But I think in the end, I'm going to pretty much reserve my opinion until a final report comes from the investigation.
Okay, I guess that's the best way to do it. My guest is Barry Schwartz, 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. Barry, let's turn to the scientific research. Now, you were the documenting photographer that went over there in 1978 to examine that shroud.
That is correct.
Tell me a little bit about what your first impressions were when you saw this.
Well, of course, our team had spent about 2 years in preparation to go to Turin to perform this series of tests and to gather data based from the shroud to try and determine the image formation mechanism. Obviously, we'd seen many photographs of it prior to our winding up at Turin, but we really weren't even sure we would be given permission until we were there with all of our equipment. Of course, we were given permission, and ultimately were given 5 days and nights, about 120 hours, to perform our examination of the shroud. My first impressions really were, it was kind of an amazing moment, mainly because I'd spent 2 years learning about, reading about an object that I really had very little knowledge of prior to my getting involved with the team. And so it was kind of an amazing thing to see this cloth suddenly in front of us, unveiled, if you will. And certainly an awe-inspiring moment. I don't think there was anyone in the room who didn't realize that this was a reasonably significant moment. So I've spent a long time now, about 18 or 19 years, thinking about what I felt that particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was a photographer and I feel very privileged to have been a part of this team, I think now I generally tell people that I felt 800 billion pairs of eyes looking over my shoulder.
Well, that's pretty incredible. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we'll get into some of the history of the Shroud, when it was discovered, the image itself. Because the image itself was not discovered until about 100 years ago, I believe, and Barry's going to talk about that. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009. My guest is Barry Schwartz. We're talking about the mysterious Shroud of Turin in Turin, Italy, following this fire, this mysterious fire that happened over there April 12th. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Get ready to copy down some computer addresses. I'm going to tell you how you can plug into the oldest and most reliable news and information service on UFOs and the paranormal on the entire planet. It's the Paranet Information Services Worldwide Network. First of all, check out our page on the World Wide Web. It provides you hot links to other UFO and paranormal sites, along with audio clips from recent Paranet radio shows and much more. Type in www.paranet.org/paranet/. If you're a subscriber to America Online, CompuServe, or the Microsoft Network, you can access the 7 Paranet news groups covering UFOs, metaphysics, parapsychology, and more. Just select the Internet News Group function from your online service and search for Paranet. You can also send us email at this address, paranet@paranet.org. So, don't accept wannabes and substitutes. The name is Paranet, the world's most important communications network.
Support the Paranet Continuum by ordering from the 1997 Paranet catalog. Paranet offers products and services designed to keep you abreast of the latest in ufology and news of the paranormal. Get full-color laser-printed t-shirts and sweatshirts with space travel and alien themes, including the spectacular black-and-white Paranet t-shirt. Get audio cassettes with more than 150 Paranet Continuum radio shows, featuring interviews of people such as Richard Hoagland, Jacques Vallée, Travis Walton, Stanton Friedman, Malachi Martin, Alan Hale, Betty Hill, Edgar Mitchell, and others, and topics ranging from abductions to Zeta Reticuli. You can also get Continuum, Paranet's official quarterly magazine, Paranet memberships of access to MyCap, our investigations group, and discounts to merchandise. The 1997 Paranet catalog is free. Call now, 1-800-836-6381. That's 1-800-836-6381 for the Paranet catalog.
UFOs for real, or are they just fiction, or imagination, or disinformation? To find out, stay tuned for more of the Paranet Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And welcome back, my guest, Barry Schwartz, and we're talking to him from L.A. He was the documenting photographer in 1978 on the original Shroud of Turin research project. Barry, this image that's on this cloth, if I'm not mistaken, how was it discovered? It was about 100 years ago, wasn't it?
I'm sorry. You were breaking up a little, and I'm having a kind of an audio problem over on this end.
Okay. I was asking, you know, the image on this cloth that was there, was discovered about 100 years ago, was it not?
Well, actually, the image was not discovered 100 years ago, but certain properties of the image certainly were. In 1898, at a exposition of the Shroud, an Italian photographer by the name of Secondo Pia was given an opportunity officially by the church to photograph the Shroud. And, of course, working with the state-of-the-art of materials and equipment at the time, had a massive undertaking to try and light the very large piece of cloth and photograph it evenly. However, he did make the photographs, and late in the night or early in the next morning as he was processing the plates and held up the first plate to the morning light, he almost dropped it because he discovered that the image on the shroud was in fact a negative and the image on his plate was far more positive. In other words, the lights and darks were more natural and looked like a positive print.
When was this cloth discovered?
Well, it comes into recorded history, or undisputed history, let's call it, around 1350 in Chambéry, France. However, prior to that, there are places throughout history, according to historians and researchers, where the Shroud of Turin definitely must have been the cloth in question. For example, a manuscript, a Hungarian illustrated manuscript or illuminated manuscript, dated 1204, has an illustration of the Shroud of Turin, including four sets of four burn holes in the cloth that exist today that obviously predate the 1532 fire that caused so much damage to the cloth. So it does appear that the Shroud has been around for some time longer than the carbon date would indicate.
Has it always been held to be the burial cloth?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Has it always been held to be the burial cloth?
Well, it's been claimed to be the burial cloth. No one at this point in time scientifically can prove that it is or it isn't. Obviously, the testing continues, and even the carbon date, which seemed to put the question to rest in 1988, has been brought into question now because of the possibility that the samples used were either from a side strip that was rewoven in medieval times or that there were contaminants on the cloth caused by a microbe that deposits a bioplastic coating on the fibers that would have skewed the carbon date considerably.
Now, you're a photographer, and you've got an eye for things like this. Is this image a photograph?
Well, it has many properties of a photograph, without question, the most obvious one being the negative aspects of it. However, it also includes certain properties that no normal photograph would incorporate.
Such as?
And the primary one I'm talking about now is what has been typically referred to as the three-dimensional properties. Very difficult to get people to understand that what we mean by three-dimensional properties is if you look at the cloth and you see the lights and darks of the image, the darkest parts of the image on the cloth were closest to the body and the more faint parts of the image were further away, for example, in the eye sockets or in the neck area of the image. And what makes the property so unique is that if you digitize this image and look at it in a piece of equipment called a VP8 image analyzer, which takes these densities and converts them to vertical relief, you get a very excellent three-dimensional view of what appears to be a body laying under the cloth. A normal photograph yields nonsense and nothing like that on the image of the shroud.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call it a photograph or photographic-like image, but that particular property is not typically found in any photograph.
That's very interesting. And what about a possibility of a painting?
Well, that's certainly been explored considerably over the years. And frankly, when I went to Turin, I was quite skeptical. I'm Jewish and consequently didn't have a bias for it. If anything, I was probably a bit of a skeptic.
Mm-hmm.
And I expected that I would walk up to the cloth and see the brush strokes and turn around and go home. There are no brush strokes. There is no paint or pigment forming the image. There is none of the typical things you would expect from an artist's rendition. And frankly, I would point out that with the Shroud of Turin being the most investigated relic or artifact in human history, with more than 250,000 hours spent on it, if this were a simple painting, I think simple science would have proved that a long time ago.
Well, I have to agree with you. What about from a physics standpoint? Is there anything to explain this process naturally occurring?
Well, there are many theories on this, but typically when one studies the shroud, from a physics standpoint, you can pretty much come up with some ideas or results that might explain the image. However, when you test that against the chemistry, it doesn't work. Interestingly, when you get the chemistry right, the physics seems to be wrong, and vice versa.
What are some of the leading theories? I guess one good question I have would be, what are some of the leading theories to explain this?
Well, you know, frankly, there have been many theories proposed. Not one of them has really gotten close enough to explaining all of the properties of the shroud. And of course, many books have been published and many television programs have explored the various possibilities of what may have formed the image: short burst of radiation, rubbing a statue with some powder and then rubbing the cloth onto the statue, heating a statue and wrapping the cloth around it to scorch the image onto the cloth. Basically, all of these have been disproved by the research.
Take that in the studio.
So what does that do for the carbon dating? The carbon dating kind of basically is about the only, isn't that about the only thing that tries to disprove that this thing is as old as we think it is? Or
in my experience with this, the carbon dating, obviously, my background is photography. I'm not a physicist or a chemist. So much as the church has said they would accept the general consensus of modern science, I usually give that as my answer as well. What I found is there is no consensus of modern science, and I believe that may not yet have determined. Well, it's obvious we have not yet determined the accurate mechanism for the image formation. We can put an image onto a piece of linen cloth; that's not a problem. It just doesn't have the same properties as the image on the Shroud of Turin.
Is it true? I don't know if this is factual or not, but I've heard that as time goes, this image continues to like darken.
Well, frankly, it's actually the opposite. The image, according to the researchers who have studied it, is basically made of degraded or oxidized cellulose, meaning, like a newspaper yellows with age, so has the image into the cloth in contrast to its background.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, what's happening is the background is catching up now. So the background continues to yellow or discolor with age, where the image area of the cloth itself is pretty much as oxidized as far as it can go. So, in essence, the image is technically disappearing.
Interesting. Hold that thought. We're going to come back. When we get back from break, we'll get into a little bit more of some of the photographic aspects of this very mysterious image. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-836-2009. Again, my guest is Barry Schwartz. We're talking to him from Los Angeles, California, and Barry is a photographer. He was the documenting photographer on the original Shroud of Turin research project in 1978, a very interesting mystery. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm Michael Corbin, and you're listening to the Paranet Continuum.
We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's best personal computer just for you. Better, stronger, faster than it was before. We have a stark ambition to make your computer everything you need it to be. You've had it in your dreams, now get it in your computer. Better monitors, stronger, bigger hard drives, faster processors and modems. You can have the technology the government can't cover up at prices far below what the Defense Department pays for a paperclip. Call Stark Ambition today at 303-809-0274 or visit our website at www.starknet.com. Call for the best prices on components, new systems, service and repair on single units and networks. On the information superhighway, it's better to travel with a nerd. So get yours today and put our Stark Ambition to work for you. Call Stark Ambition 303-809-0274 or see our price list on the web at www.starknet.com.
There are many magazines about UFOs. Continuum is different. Continuum is the official quarterly publication of Paranet and MICAP and is the outgrowth of Paranet's worldwide communications network on paranormal phenomena. It's in-depth,
challenging, and above all, fascinating. It takes a straight-ahead, no-nonsense look at UFOs, worldwide sighting reports, parapsychology, abduction phenomena, futuristic science, and much, much more. You can get Continuum for just $18 a year. Continuum is also available by fax for a small additional fee. Be informed. Call now and subscribe to Continuum. Call 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-836-6381. Visa and MasterCard accepted. Continuum, published by Paranet Information Services in MICAP. Order yours today at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. Continuum, one of the most fascinating magazines you'll ever read. Stay in touch with the latest news on the paranormal and the growing UFO phenomena by fax, computer network, and this program, the Paranet Continuum. Here's your host, Michael Corbett.
And once again, returning from Los Angeles, California, is my guest tonight, Barry Schwartz. Barry, talking about the photography that you've done, I'm curious. Now, you've got a very impressive website set up on the Internet. We're going to get the... We're going to get you to give out the URL for that website a little bit later on the hour. But in the meantime, I'm curious, why did you set this up? It's quite extensive.
Well, frankly, for about 18 years, I stayed in the background and off to the sidelines. I had a career of my, within my own profession. I did not see the Shroud of Turin as the single project that I had done to build a career on. I continued in production of video and doing scientific and medical and industrial photography and research, but the website more or less came about because I started hearing very strange things about the Shroud, like Leonardo da Vinci painted it and and things of that nature. So I was getting more and more frustrated by the fact that the public has rarely had an opportunity to get to the real facts about the Shroud. No offense, but the popular media typically doesn't devote a lot of attention to it. They look for a 3 or 4 minute soundbite at best. And aside from some of the tabloid publications, the good science on the Shroud of Turin that's been done generally resides in journals, published peer-reviewed journals that exist primarily in research libraries where the general public has little opportunity to go. I also felt that I hadn't really completed what I'd begun. I felt a great privilege to be a part of that team, made about 2,700 photographs, about 60 of which have seen the light of day and have been published. And I felt it gave me an opportunity to share some of the other work with the public and make it available, and at the same time try and make some of the factual information about the Shroud of Turin available in a broad way via the Internet so that people who were interested in the subject could read the real facts about the Shroud and then make their own minds up based on fact rather than fiction.
Has this had any kind of an effect on you?
Well, certainly it has. I don't think you can, be involved with a subject that is so meaningful to so many people without it having some effect on you. Basically, being an inherently honest person, the way my family brought me up with, strict moral values, people were asking me questions, much like the one you did, and I felt obligated to look inside myself and try and find out what I felt so that when people asked me, I could give them a good and valid answer. The impact it's had really is it really got me in touch with my own spiritual self, although I'm still Jewish and I have not had any revelationary kind of conversions, although some people look to me possibly as having that. But I regard this cloth basically from the standpoint of science, and it's odd because some of the email I get tells me how They're convinced that this is an image that represents Jesus, and I tell them that I pretty much get to the same place that they've gotten based on knowing the factual science of the shroud.
And, of course, scientifically, we still are unable. It's a big unknown.
It is a big unknown, but frankly, based on my involvement for 20 years in my studying of the subject matter and being involved in many cases directly in the research, but certainly involved with many of the researchers, frankly, the idea that a medieval forger, if we will call him that, created the shroud intentionally would make it far more miraculous than if we had an artifact of a man's impact is still felt at least by a billion people on our planet.
I would agree with you, because if we could find out who did something like this, as extraordinary as it is, it would be quite a mystery in and of itself.
It would. It boggles my mind to think that someone could have created this kind of an image in medieval times and only made one. they'd gotten the technique down to make one, they would have made many.
What's the future now? Is the research project, the team, is it still together?
No, the team has been officially dissolved, although many other people still, including some of the original team members, are involved in shroud research. The future, at this point in time, the church has agreed that there will be further science allowed, but primarily in the areas of preservation and conservation of the cloth, and obviously we need to determine how fast the image is going away. So some work has to be done, some imaging work will have to be done usually, but probably in the spectral area, just to be able to characterize the image and quantify the image so that we can measure and see if it is going away, how quickly, so that more work can be done in the future. As for the future in general, though, one of the things that my website has done, certainly not because I planned it that way, but because it's evolved into that, taken a life of its own, is it does solve one of the major problems shroud research has had for years, and that is the decentralization of the research.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, the difficulty of communication between researchers and a real difficult method to share information. Information wasn't getting shared. So I see the Internet as a great place for that kind of centralization of the information and data so that qualified researchers can not only access data but share their information with other researchers.
That's a very good thing, too, that the World Wide Web does provide a real great access point for people who want to know what's really going on. And your webpage does provide that scientific bent and access to those papers that you were referring to earlier. I'm curious, in nearly 20 years now since the research project has taken place, have you heard anything as far as from the scientific community as to any kind of new instrumentation or new methods that might be applied to this that might help explain it, that they could utilize on it?
Absolutely. There are new imaging techniques, including very sophisticated digital spectral imaging that can look at the shroud wavelength by wavelength. There are a lot of imaging technologies that are available to us now. As a matter of fact, on our desktops today, we have more powerful computers than NASA's Jet Propulsion
right.
Lab used to bring us all these Voyager and Viking images. So I think that there really is grounds to apply the new technology to the image and to the surrounding images, much like that Jerusalem Post article discussed, that there is an idea now there may be some off-body images. I happened to spend a part of last week with Alan Wanger at Duke University reviewing his materials.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little frustrating. I frankly I won't say I'm skeptical, but I believe that he's basing his results on images so far removed from an original image that there may be many artifacts that he's seeing as well. So I think more work needs to be done before even his work can be absolutely verified scientifically.
Does this the article I read that news article from the Jerusalem Post just before introducing you tonight. Does that have a very positive impact on the mystery itself, or does it?
Well, I think that most hard science shroud researchers look at that news release and the related work as speculative right now. I probably would have to include myself on that list.
Okay.
I said I spent the time with Wanger. I looked at what he was showing me. I agreed there are shapes there that may well be the things he claims they are. But right now he's working from a print, a life-size enlargement made from a third-generation Henri negative from taken in 1933. We need to go back and look again, and we need to look in those areas, and we need to do it in a manner that if there are off-body images, we can actually identify them accurately.
Okay. All right, hold that thought. When we come back from our break, we'll get some closing comments, and we'll get the URL and how people can reach you or your webpage and be able to take a look at all this interesting stuff. So stay tuned. My guest is Barry Schwartz, and we'll be back in just a moment. Until then, I'm Michael Corbin, and this is the Paranet Continuum. We'll be right back.
Get ready to copy down some computer addresses. I'm going to tell you how you can plug into the oldest and most reliable news and information service on UFOs and the paranormal on the entire planet. It's the Paranet Information Services Worldwide Network. First of all, check out our page on the World Wide Web. It provides you hot links to other UFO and paranormal sites, along with audio clips from recent Paranet radio shows and much more. Type in www.paranet.org/paranet/. If you're a subscriber to America Online, CompuServe, or the Microsoft Network, you can access the 7 Paranet news groups covering UFOs, metaphysics, parapsychology, and more. Just select the Internet News Group function from your online service and search for Paranet. You can also send us email at this address, paranet@paranet.org. So, don't accept wannabes and substitutes. The name is Paranet, the world's most important communications network.
Pilots depend on accurate, timely information, both in the cockpit and on the ground. Skyway Publications helps with both. The Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide provides convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that cater to pilots. These are free, pocket-sized guides with information on large and small airports nationwide, along with technical information, fuel and airport services, and businesses that can make life easier for pilots. Keep in mind, it's free. Check your local airport for the Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guide, or call area 970-669-1800. Call Skyway today and find out how the guide can also be a financial opportunity for you. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Check your local airport or call Skyway at 970-669-1800.
To one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet Continuum, and it deals with some of the most fascinating mysteries around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And unusual indeed, and who made the image on the Shroud of Turin is the big question that we're exploring tonight. My guest is Barry Schwartz, who's in Los Angeles. Barry, before I get to the last part of what I wanted to ask you about this product that you're working on, give us the URL for your website.
All righty. It's www.shroud.com.
www.shroud.com.
Correct.
Now, you're working on a CD-ROM, an interactive CD-ROM. Give us a little background on that.
Okay. Basically, many of the properties of the Shroud, particularly, for example, the three-dimensional properties I spoke of earlier, are very hard to explain. So I have actually just come back from creating a simulation of the VP8 image analyzer that will give viewers an opportunity to see and explore this three-image characteristic of the Shroud on their own. In addition, it will include much of the science of the Shroud that's been done in the 20th century in overview, a history of the Shroud, an overview of current and future Shroud science, a book list, a list of centers and organizations that are studying the Shroud, So it's really going to be a general information CD-ROM on the Shroud in an interactive mode that will allow people to examine it in close-up detail, much better in quality than I can do on my website at this time.
Mm-hmm. When is that product going to be out?
Hopefully by the end of the year, if all goes well.
Okay, have you got a price set for what it's going to?
I do not. I do not at this point in time, but I would do my best to try and keep it in the in the current range of pricing that typical CD-ROMs are sold.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well that's great, and you can order that through your website. And are you taking any pre-sales or anything? Or you got an 800 number or anything you can give out?
At this time, basically, I'm going to leave that to my publisher. I don't want to get into that part of it on my own. I'll allow the publisher to have access to their distribution via my website.
Okay. And finally, you mentioned earlier that there's not going to be any more, as far as scientific tests go, other than the preservation of the Shroud, the preservation and conservation of it. Do you think that we'll ever know what caused that image? Do you think it'll ever be explained?
Well, I've had a lot of time to discuss that and think about it with other researchers, and one of the ideas is that we may not yet have discovered the mode of science necessary to determine the image formation mechanism on the cloth until we have there are new forms of physics, for example, that are being explored now that may well be able to explain the image on the Shroud. And, of course, since we haven't developed those sciences at this point, we may not have an answer.
Okay. All right, well, that's it, Barry. I want to thank you for being on the program tonight to talk about the mysterious Shroud of Turin. I want to thank you very much for appearing, and we'll keep in touch with you. And that website, again, is www.shroud.com. I encourage you, if you have web access, to visit it. Also, our website is up and running. It is www.paranet.org/paranet. Again, that's www.paranet.org/paranet. And as always, if you want to reach me, you can do so at 303-863-0484. And my email address is mcorbin@dimensional.com. And I do answer all my mail. So if you have anything you want to say, send it to me there. I want to thank you for listening tonight. Bud Hopkins returns next week. We're going to talk to him again about his book, Witness, and the abduction phenomena. So that'll be an interesting program. Until next week, this is Michael Corbin telling you to keep your eyes on the skies. Good night.